You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Who asked those questions?
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from the AT&T MLS Studios in Midtown Manhattan. I'm Andrew Reed with my partners in soccer. Matt Doyle, David Goss, Charlie Davies, a normal Monday participant, is in Turks and Caicos.
Oh, sorry, Charlie.
Yeah. Hope they're
Wait, I wish I'd known that. I'd give him some guys to scout for me because I got my list of CONCACAF.
What do you think that flight was like for him? A lot of raising his hands. Hey, gotta go to the bathroom. Somebody help me out here. Him or his sons? I can't tell.
Well, we got a great email which we'll show to him whenever it is he shows up. Which is he could get these adult diapers.
Oh boy,
keep you safe.
Oh boy, right in the first minute of the show. I just want to say. We got such
get a new sponsor out of that.
Hey, Billy Forbes plays for Turks and Caicos, San Antonio FC legend.
I don't even know how to respond to that.
Way to stop the show,
yeah,
David.
To be perfectly frank with you, that's something. I kind of feel hungover this morning, guys. MLS week two, Sunday night. You know, you get the invite to go out. I don't get those anymore because dad life and whatnot. But you get it out. You go out with your friends and you're like, this kind of sucks. I'm going home. That was Nashville, Portland. No offense. And then somebody gets you to take a shot, and then Philly LAFC happens. We're going to do our winners. Mm-hmm. We're going to do our Adrian Heath
gaffer of
the week.
You're singing Les Mis at 3 a.m. in
exactly.
Midtown
That's
Manhattan.
What I'm saying. You end up at karaoke. You're eating like 3 a.m. diner food.
Or halal corner cart.
You know, wherever it is that you end up. Yeah. This game.
Let me get extra white sauce.
We just got to talk about this before we get to anything else. Like this, the biggest winner of the weekend was anybody who watched this game, who stayed up, who didn't say, you know what, it's Sunday and it's 11 p.m. and I got to go to sleep from the jump. Mm-hmm. This, I was like, every game has to be like this. Please, somehow. Even El Seno couldn't somehow make this game better, and it was still off the charts incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, it just, I'm tired, I'm exhausted. I woke up at 11 a.m., and my adrenaline is back, thanks to LAFC Philly. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Jim and
Bob. I just want to say for them, you're welcome.
And Jakob Glesnes.
I thought Jim Curtin said it to, I think he said it to Kitty with him going into halftime. And I thought it was the right statement, which was, we're not scared. We haven't played scared. We came to, you know, go toe-to-toe, punch for punch with LAFC. They get full credit for that. But what you just said of, like, I want every game like this, every LAFC game is like this. And as MLS fans, I think we have to acknowledge or thank LAFC for choosing to play this way and play this way game in and game out. And they'll give up four goals and everyone will say, oh, they can't do this anymore. And they'll show up the next week and do it again. They'll do it to Liga MX teams apparently as well. Like
they did this to Leon.
Yeah, this is who LAFC is, and it's awesome, and it's so much fun. Then you have to give a ton of credit to Philly for believing that they could go into this environment, believing that they could go to toe with them, and then doing it. They took the lead three times.
Yeah.
They probably should have tried to hold on.
Held it zero times. Yeah. But, you know, one thing at a time.
But they pressed high. They tried to create turnovers. They got numbers up into the attack when they had opportunities. There was a spell right around the first Santos goal where they were actually controlling possession. Yep. Then most of it was pressing and counterattack. But they took guys 1v1. I mean, Kasper Schabilko is a medical marvel. The things he does with the body type he has makes no sense.
Yeah, there's some moments though when I want to tell Kasper Schabilko,
yeah, he could slide a pass,
box,
or like, he could slide a pass over accurately. Yeah, like, every
get
once
in the
in a
box,
while.
Please. Sergio Santos, golazo, left footed. You know, Vermeer maybe could have done better.
Vermeer should have done better on that, but that was a Vela goal.
Yeah, it was great. Then Vela did a Vela goal.
Yep.
Off the free kick. You're like, he won't.
And surely that's going to be the best set-piece goal of the night.
Oh, surely. But then here is your moment and your call of the weekend. Jakob Glesnes.
Looks like he's lining up for a shot here.
It's the center back, Jakob Glesnes.
He's going
for it. Oh, my God! Jakob Glesnes!
Oh, my goodness!
What on earth have we just seen?
Our Norwegian sources have confirmed that it's Jakob, and then there's this
Glesnes.
You have to do the up and down
tonality.
What
is Norwegian for thunderbolt?
I have no idea.
I'm asking Anders.
Get in our ears, Anders.
Producent Anders.
Talk to whichever Norwegian you know.
Because
Swedish
you can
Anders.
Transliterate Norwegian to Swedish.
So. Yeah, I mean, they're the same language.
This is incredible.
So my favorite,
he's running up, and you're like, nah, this is like 45 yards,
including Stu Holden, who was like, he's not going to shoot this, yeah, is yeah. he? Then it goes in, and Jabir Montero goes arms up like he knew it was coming. And then they run back, and they're celebrating in that huddle. And Kasper Schabilko, you can see, is watching the big board the whole time to be like, did that really just go in? Like, what just happened?
It is one of the all-time great free kicks I've ever seen in this league. It's like the ones that I think of as being like head and shoulders above are the D-Row one against the Galaxy in like 05, I want to say, where we have this great, like, we have a great video of it where you see the regular angle, and then you see it from like behind and above to the right, and then you see it again like behind, like directly behind, and like every angle it just gets better and
levels
better.
It's Roberto Carlos. That one,
yeah, and then
and it's all about the movement of the ball. It's about the power and the movement, and that's what this was about too.
Yeah,
was A, how do you put that much power on a ball? But then how do you get it to essentially like half the goal just gets eliminated in the course of flight? Vermeer's like, okay, I got this. It's right at me. And half a second later, oh, I don't have this. And oh, now it's by me. I mean, it would have like drilled a hole in the concrete behind the net. It was still spinning in the net. It was frozen in place with the spin on it from hitting the net. I mean, it was incredible. And then, of course, you had no time to breathe because, what, like a minute
Diego
later?
Rossi puts it top corner. 69 seconds later.
Oh, nice.
Very nice goal.
Very nice. Extremely nice.
Soccer
then,
gods.
In the 69th minute, Brendan Aaronson.
Also very nice.
Yeah.
Makes it 3-2. And then Eddie Segura, 2 minutes later, Bob Bradley basically said this was like Red Bulls-esque from Philly. And I thought this season's very interesting for Philly because last year was their biggest step forward ever. It was like this kind of coming out party of what we're doing, what we're building, it's working, both in the academy and now sort of with, I want to call them sort of like Moneyball signings.
Mm-hmm.
But the style now is different. So you had this high, and then It takes bravery to do this, and it takes some job security too, to come in and say, okay, we're going to switch it up. Now we're going to be a pressing team. What did you see tactically from them? Because, Dave, you kind of touched on it there. They had the moments where they dominated possession, but it really wasn't about that for Jim Curtin.
It was about trying to dominate 50-50s and trying to make sure that LAFC, the teams that bunker against LAFC are kind of shooting themselves in the foot, because once you let LAFC get comfortable completing passes, especially in the attacking third, they're eventually going to combine so well that they open you up. And look, it's not like this was a defensive masterclass from Philadelphia. They gave up 3 goals, but they never let, like, job number one was never letting LAFC get comfortable passing the ball like that. And then having, I'm blanking on the name of their new D-mid.
Martinez.
He's good.
Who is already a Philly legend.
Yeah.
Playing with like temporary sutures in his face after getting kicked early.
Looked like he played for the Phillies in 1973.
Awesome.
I was thinking like, Flyers. Having him that's there, hockey
like,
stuff.
Him, Montero, and Bedoya there, their balance was perfect in central midfield in terms of one protects, one challenges. All and like that's the whole defensive game plan is one protects, one challenges, one protects, one challenges. And like you have to do it all as a team. I thought going into this, I thought that the two weak points for Philly were obviously going to be Matt Real, who's 20-year-old, backup left back, and like he's replacing the guy who I thought was best or at worst second best left back in the league last year in Kai Wagner. And then Brendan Aaronson. Not because I think Brendan Aaronson not good, is that I thought last year he was soft. He didn't get into these challenges. He was not about pressuring the ball. He was not a physical presence at all. And then he was not a guy who completed plays in the box. And in this one, I was texting with Bud and that Slack group that you see me.
Yeah.
You're like, guys, Aaronson's out there being physical.
Yeah.
Like he's finding spaces off the ball and he's doing the Brendan Aaronson things that you like. He's really clever. He combines well, but it's like he's also like laying shoulders into people, like winning the ball high, keying transition moments, and then getting that third goal for Philly. So it was just like, oh, okay. Philly's legit.
I have to throw this in here from the mailbag. Vince Smith in South Jersey, which is sort of the perfect Union emailer for us. He said they looked disappointing in week one to the Union, but they gave LAFC a scare. He loves Aaronson. No signs of a sophomore slump. El Brujo, which I was trying to throw in there. That's Martinez's nickname, which is like incredible. Mavioso, he says, an absolute banger from Glesnes. Total team performance against arguably one of the best MLS sides in league history. I would say probably the best side in MLS history. I think this is a legit playoff team, but is it reasonable to expect them to contend for first in the East? This is one of those, hey, Joseph Martinez is out. Do we have a chance?
Yeah.
Does this Philly team, Dave, have that sort of potential to you? Or is it still like, hey, let's keep it realistic. This was a high point.
No, I think for this year, my biggest question mark was the D-mid position because you got rid of Madunian, which made sense because you were going to change the way you played. But Jose
Martinez, but also super risky at the same time.
And Jose Martinez doesn't have a ton of profile. And actually, I'd heard that it was more of a Philly 2 signing this year. You bring in Matej Orovic, are we right there?
Mm.
Who doesn't have a high profile as well. And Warren Cravall, who has been solid in his MLS career, but has a ceiling to what he can do. And that's kind of what you saw, I think, against Dallas. One was feeling their way out. I thought the balance that Doyle talked about was off in that game and that Bedoya was too wide for a lot of it, which left gaps in front of Corval, and it pulled Montero even further across the field, and they struggled at times. And then Martinez comes in, and he can cover the ground that you need him to cover. He's winning tackles everywhere, and he's clean enough with that first touch to allow the guys who are good on the ball to get going forward. The purpose of changing the style they played was to have a higher ceiling. Was what they did last year with the money that they spend was never going to be the best team in MLS. They just couldn't get there. But with this style, with the way that they scout, with the young players that they have, I mean, they could run all day. And what Doyle talked about of making midfield difficult and breaking things up for LAFC, that's what the Galaxy did last year in El Tráfico. And they ran out of gas 35 minutes in because they're not 20 years old. And so then you saw this Philly team. If they can continue to believe in this style and grow, they've got depth at most positions in their system. That's quality already. Matt Real starting 2 games for Kai Wagner. Jack Elliott, who was a full-time starter last year, coming off the bench now because he was away for a lot of preseason, and they've got other options
but
there.
Actually, and that's good for Philly because Mark McKenzie is going to be at the Olympic qualifying
absolutely.
Team. Now you have those 3 guys that can rotate in. You have faith in all of them.
So there's no reason not to believe that if they can stick to this style and continue to grow, that they could contend at the top of the East.
How about this? Let's, before we move on and get to our winners here, this game was that good, honestly. Go watch the condensed game if you haven't watched it. Go watch the full game if you can find it. The condensed game is on the MLS app. Carlos Vela hit the 50-goal mark. Can we just have we do this all the time. We're asking people, is he the best player in MLS history? We have a moment to talk about every week, whether it's against Leon or it's the chip last week or now it's the free kick goal or it's just every moment he gets on the ball and you just think, nobody can stand in front of this guy. And even if they do, he has the touch, the body control, the balance, the movement to make you basically disappear. I mean, it's a pleasure. It really is a pleasure. I can't think of another player except maybe recently, at least, past 10 years, prime Sebastian Giovinco, who just sort of took over games, and every single moment you knew they could do it, and it was just basically their choice. Is he going to decide to do it at this moment? Carlos Vela, 50 goals. It's not just that. It's the assists, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's the entirety of his effect, and I think about him in this way. Okay, we talk about transfer fees. What, he cost $6 million? Am I right?
Yeah, something wrong.
$6 million? Are you kidding me?
I could buy a brownstone in Brooklyn. No,
You'd be lucky. Don't even start that conversation up again. But it's not just about the money they paid for him. It's about the money he's going to make them on the back end. Because Diego Rossi without Carlos Vela is not this Diego Rossi. Like, Edward Atuesta without this Carlos Vela is not this Edward Atuesta. He is, like, the ultimate level up, both performance on the field, but ultimately I think what LAFC want to be, which is kind of a juggernaut as far as style of play and results go, but also a juggernaut in the wider market where they can be just sort of this talent factory. And he's the center of it. He's the center of the universe. And it's amazing.
So are you saying that this should be the model for DP balance for MLS teams? Like, go out and get your Vela or your Giovinco or your Ladero, right? A guy who's in the prime of his career. And
Pozuelo might be that
Pozuelo,
guy.
Pozuelo, and who is legitimately excellent. But is not going anywhere. Like, he's like, this is where he wants to spend the last 6, 7, 8 years of his career. And then
you probably have to put Joseph in that convo now.
Joseph, I mean,
he resigned.
He has gotten to that point, but he wasn't that type of player when they got him, right?
Yeah.
But there's no question in terms of quality. Joseph is in that.
And now it seems like future.
Yeah.
He's an Atlanta United player.
I like where you're going with that, but I think it's maybe a little too simple because I think the goal in the DP slots should always be to go out and get a game-changing player in their prime who makes all the players around them
better. Yeah, but what about a franchise-changing player? Because if you can there's not a great example of this, but like, let's say that Albert Rusnak was this player, okay? And RSL got him for whatever they got him for, and he was making everybody so much better, and you could then sell Savarino for $8 million instead of $2 million, and then you could, you know, sell Corey Baird for, you know, $3.5 million yeah. instead of $1 million. Like, isn't that?
Yeah, no. What you're saying is the model of how you spend, which is, I think, to an extent, what Inter Miami's trying to do.
Right.
Pizarro is the guy that stays, and he's the guy you're building around, and he's supposed to make Pellegrini and Carranza better.
Mm-hmm.
And the belief, and I think up front would be
work cut out for him on Pellegrini.
Absolutely. But when you bring them in, we're gonna sell you.
Yep.
And when you do that, then you bring the next guy back through, which is Brian Rodriguez right now. And for Atlanta, I think that was one of the reasons they kept Joseph was Almirón and Joseph were all going to leave, and then what were they built around?
Right.
And I think LAFC has gotten it right in that Vela makes guys around him better. You can also build a competitive roster because you know he's going to be there next year.
Yeah.
Where it's hard for other teams, if you buy three young guys,
yeah.
to say, this is who we are in 2 years, so we want to get a fullback who stays and doesn't go as high because he's going to be playing around this guy for the rest of his career. This is the way we shape our team, so this is what we're looking for at D-mid. If you don't know who that team's going to be in 3 years, LAFC doesn't have
it. So we solved it, guys. Everyone
buy Vela.
Yeah, just go out and get your own Carlos Vela.
Yeah, get 26 of those guys. And I guess that's why I said it was maybe a little bit too simple, because if you're RSL, you probably aren't attracting Carlos Vela. Like, if you're Kansas City, they've come out and said it. You're not attracting that guy. But maybe that's what a Felipe Gutierrez kind of is in a different way.
Hey, man, they don't even need Felipe Gutierrez.
Apparently not. Carlos Vela, thank you for all the moments you've given us and will give us, LAFC Philly.
This house we respect, Gabby Kinda.
Yes, we do.
Why are you pointing at me?
I was waiting for the drop. Every time we mention
Brahim Habayim, Gabby Kinda.
I was waiting for the drop.
Welcome.
Okay, let's get to our winners of week two. David, get us started.
I have to go first?
Yeah, you're top of the list. I make the rundown. There's literally your name, a colon, and then the name of the team that you say is the winner.
Okay, let's be real. I don't know who the rundown.
Okay, let's start over again. All right, let's do our winners of MLS Week 2. David, you go first.
I say Sporting KC. Oh, what a coincidence. We were just talking about that.
We actually did a perfect segue
there.
You could have given me the assist, Carlos Vela.
You're like Brian Rodriguez.
A little bit.
He set you up perfectly.
You can't make the big plays right now.
No interest in assists. I say Sporting KC, just emotional alone. Your first game at home after a tough year. The guy you spent a ton of money on shows up. And not just like scores a goal. Has a crazy assist. Megging guys. Pumping the crowd up after other players' goals. Yeah. Like, he was everything
first
a guy could be.
First one into the celebration.
Yeah.
And, like, I never used to watch for that, but after, you know, working with Bobby for a couple of years, it's like, I watch for that.
Yeah. So they got everything they wanted. They should beat Houston at home. That's a reality, but they jumped all over them.
They smoked them.
I think Houston had a 0.6 expected goals. Like, they weren't even in the game. You've still got this midfield that's slowly coming together, but Roger Espinoza, it looks like, is about to have... Yeah, you guys forgot about me. I was done, and now I'm going to have a killer season.
Ilya Sanchez also has some of that, too. There were moments last year where Ilya is, like, running, trying to recover, and like, oh, no chance. He's going to get nowhere close to this play, and yesterday he's stopping the ball. Like, he's back, stopping the ball. Not bad turnovers in bad areas, which was their theme of 2019.
So they've cut down on the turnovers. They also have, because of Gabby Kinda and because of Gianluca Busio, they're five deep in central midfield now. So Peter Vermes should be able to rotate these guys. If he's asking Ilya and Espinoza to play 2,500 minutes again, I don't think this is going to last. But through 180 minutes, the returns are promising.
There's no Felipe Gutierrez yet for them.
Yeah, I was going to say, aren't they six guys deep, like, if they have
all
Felipe?
All of a sudden.
No.
Oh, sorry, my mouth is off.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm good.
Yeah,
I'm here.
Either way, the depth is sort of the difference. Gerso comes in, had a goal called off that should have stood.
Yeah.
By the way, Pulido's goal should not have stood.
Yeah, he was offside.
He was offside on that play.
But the goal he created for, who was the assistant? Gabby Kinda. He starts it 60 yards from goal in his own half. He gets the ball, two defenders close on him. He waits a beat for them both to react, and then he rolls the ball under himself, spins the defenders, charges upfield, lays it off, and keeps running into the box for the assist. that's what you want. And quite honestly, I didn't know if he was going to be that type of player for them. He did a lot for Chivas, but you never watched the Chivas game and said, this guy's dominating the game and everything's built around him.
Yeah.
Pizarro was more that guy when they won the title than he was. He was that guy. It's against Houston, but it was better than it was the week before. And for KC, that's what you want to see.
Let me ask you about Houston, because this is largely the same team that's missed the playoffs 2 years in a row. They've given up about 120 goals over that time span. And they're, like, again, largely the same team. They just trotted out the same guys. What is, for you guys, like, what is the thought process there that this can work? We have like a large data set that says,
yeah, you're stretching
actually
the,
it doesn't.
The bands of logic there, I think.
I think you could come into this year and say the same about Montreal, right? And they've been better than they were the last few years because they took a specific approach. Yeah. Yeah. I think they're building a platform to grow off of. But the idea was we're going to be tougher to break down.
Mm-hmm.
And this fits our skill set a little better. And Montreal's been good this year. And Houston, I don't know who they are still. And I'm not going
to
say.
They tried to press.
And
that was a disaster.
And that's what Tapper almost said
with
coming
that,
in.
That midfield.
That's what I was just going to say.
Is
don't even look at the back line. Like, start ahead of the back line.
And then you look at the back line, cover your eyes. Like, Houston's in trouble.
It's tough. And look, they don't have Albert Elias, so they can't really threaten anybody right now. Mauro Manotas is not going to do it on his own. And I think Memo is good. He had some moments.
Memo's good, but he's like a good solid starter.
Right. Darwin Quintero, I am of the opinion that like last year kind of showed where his limitations are and where they will be. It's
Darwin Quintero is like Ilsenio.
Yeah.
Bring him on for the final 30 minutes, you know, and
which is what they did.
Yeah.
In this game, but you were 4-3-0 down at that point, so it makes it a little bit harder.
Ramos has some stuff to figure out.
But I would say I agree with everything you're saying, and there's nothing player-wise that you can say they're better than they were.
Yeah.
Everything has to come from system, belief, coach, whatever
but,
it
like,
is.
If you're looking at this roster, do you start to try to do what the Rapids did this time last year? You're like, okay, like we spent too much on these veterans who are like not going to work out. Let's try to find some distressed assets around the league. Let's, you know, work the margins and trust in our coaching staff to build those players up and to turn them into higher
but
level.
They are, but they're much younger than Colorado was.
Are they?
Are
I mean, you're talking Tomas Martinez, Manotas, Elise, like
Tomas
this.
Tomas Martinez is 25.
Yeah.
Not once.
But Gashi was 29. Like, you're talking about guys in different stages.
Tomas Martinez has not once looked like even an average MLS number 10.
Yeah, he's not a DP. I don't even think he's a 10.
He's not a starter.
Well, I don't think he's a 10. I think he should play deeper.
He doesn't play defense.
Maybe, but I think that...
What are you doing?
He doesn't cover ground out there.
You want to give up more goals?
Maybe. That'd be fun.
I think
they could play LAFC
every
weekend.
What you're onto here is something. And what they've got to be doing is sort of like long-term planning for the next 3 years. That's what you should be doing when you have a new head coach and you're trying to change sort of the soul of the club.
But their long-term planning should be the academy.
That's
what
I'm saying. They're in Texas. That's what I was just about to say. But you interrupted. Is that you should be planning on how to get the most out of the... Yeah,
remember he was saying he doesn't have a brand?
Exactly.
He definitely has a brand.
Is to get the most out of the assets you have there and what you can cultivate. And that's going to take time for Ty Ramos. But in the meantime, it's like exactly what you were saying. It's
but
how do you set a foundation?
In the short term, why keep playing the same guys?
I don't disagree. That's why maybe you go and like shuffle the deck a little bit. I think they've got to find a way to re-sign Albert Elise.
I wouldn't. No, I think
like you got
if you can keep Albert Elise and sell Manotas, because like I think Christian Ramirez is a starting caliber center forward. Maybe take what you make off of the Manotas sale and plow that into the roster.
If Tab's hell bent on pressing, is Ramirez a starting center forward for him?
Can you be hell bent on pressing if you have those midfielders?
I don't know.
Now we're going to find out here. Can I just throw one more little note in here before we move on to Doyle's winner? I think Kyrie Shelton has played
awesome.
Quite well.
Yeah.
To start this season. And he is a handful at wing. It kind of reminds me of
Do it.
I knew you're gonna drag me for it, but like the old CJ Sapong, Ty Kamara, like target
fit,
winger.
Baby.
Nobody can once he gets on the ball, you can't get him off it, and he's turning everybody.
And he physically dominates any fullback he's up against.
And he's choosing the right passes now, too.
I think he's top five in run in ground covered and like explosive sprints so far.
It's really fun to watch. And by the way, somehow Johnny Russell's like third or fourth fiddle now, and he is just a monster. Yeah. There are like three or four times a game where you just have to cover your eyes and just be like, I hope that defender never sees that clip ever again. All right, Doyle, here's your winner. What is it?
The Super Draft. Everybody wants to write off the Super Draft every year.
I see the joy in your eyes.
I love it. The contrarian in me loves it. Robbie Robinson started, picked up a secondary assist on Inter Miami's goal, and he was awesome. He was dominating that DC center back pairing of Birnbaum and poor Briant, who was like looked washed, but then. Injury right before the halftime.
Yeah, can we just throw it out there let's go.
The fingers crossed, because
It
did not look good. Robinson looked impressive. His teammate, Dylan Nealis, started on the right wing in that 3-4-3, 3-4-2-1.
Felt like that was inevitable. Back.
Yeah.
It was going to happen.
He's a much better passer than the other options, and having three at the back meant that like the defensive concerns weren't as huge about him. I thought he was very good. Ryan Raposo, the fourth overall pick. He came on for Vancouver in that win at LA, had the secondary assist on the only goal of the game. Looked quick, decisive in his movements, and like he has touch on the ball when he passes.
Helped them break out when LA was throwing numbers forward.
Yeah, I was really impressed with Raposo. Then who else? Henry Kessler started again at center back for New England, made what everybody thought should have been the game-winning play when he just completely muscled Robert Berich off the ball and then played Brandon Bye in on the overlap absolutely perfectly. Justin Renix missed a sitter, but Kessler has looked very, very good through two games. Patrick Segrist started again for the Red Bulls. Wasn't great, but on the road got a point.
Say his name. His single name. What
Achara.
A legend.
Achara. Yeah. The Super Draft pick of the week. Another winger in the stable for Toronto FC, but they threw him out there against NYCFC, and he got the better of Anton Tinnerholm, who I think we all agreed was the best right back in this league last year. He was kind of lost in transition moments, defensively especially, but like every time he got on the ball, and then in like simple combination moments in the attacking third, he was devastating. It was fun. Like, it was a good week for the Super Draft.
I saw a quote from him, and it's such an amazing quote. Quote, "Soccer is awesome. I just love playing it. It gives me confidence." It's just pure.
Yeah.
That is so pure and wonderful to get that game-winning goal. And they've said from the start, he's been great.
Yeah.
Your guy, Tsubasa Endo, maybe has some...
Well, Tsubasa was injured.
He was, but he's got now he's got a challenger.
I'm sorry,
here.
Dude. Of everyone injured at this table, Achara is my guy. I've been talking about him
for
4 years.
Endo guy,
you can get out of my face. I was texting TFC front office saying, I like that draft pick. And they were responding with, who?
Ooh.
I'm the one who's the Achara guy. Also went to Blackrock, where Jack Harrison came from, as well as Jacob Schaffelberg.
Well, dropping the knowledge.
But like Endo, Schaffelberg, Nick DeLeon, Piatti,
Gallardo.
Oh, well, those first four were hurt.
I think Gallardo
came out hurt. But like, it's just like they have so many wingers in that. Well, anyway, Achara was awesome.
Deuce didn't have that. Used to that wasn't
no,
wasn't a thing. There were no
opposite,
winners.
Yeah.
All right, here's my winner. Colorado Rapids, baby. Had that big buildup, a full week. They're just banging the drum. We're coming home. Good crowd. Crowd saw a win. Yunus Nnamdi. He's a baller. We've been hearing all preseason. Good left foot. Really good on the dribble. His shot, we saw, was very good as well. This is what you want from a home opener. Your DP scores. And then you get a late winner from the ledge. The MLS Cup winner. Back in the day, Drew Moore, set pieces. Doyle still can't stop these guys.
2 in 2 weeks.
Yeah, it's incredible. And William Yarbrough signed, which is random and awesome too.
Yeah.
Well, there's only a reason they're so good at set pieces. It's pricey, mate.
His delivery is pretty awesome.
Who's the? I had in my notes the assistant coach. They've been shouting out
Chris Sharp. He's a goalkeeper coach and like apparently their set piece coach as well. I said this all offseason. They had 17 set piece goals last year, and I wrote like 5 previews about the Rapids being like, I like the way they played. Robin Fraser seems like a good coach. No way they're scoring 17 set piece goals again. They have 2 in 2 weeks. They look unstoppable anytime there's a restart. I thought from open play, they did pretty well, but they were lacking a little bit of touch and a little bit of polish, but that's why you go out and you get a number 10 DP like Yunus Nnamdi, because that guy can get you a goal out of nothing, which is what he did.
I would like to see this group when Benazee gets back, because Nicholson, I think he's played well. They like what they've gotten, but it's not the same ability to break that last
Nicholson,
man down and create.
It has like 8 goals and 9 assists and 6,000 career minutes.
If you trash on him, Robin Fraser's coming through that wall to take you out. So I didn't want to be out on that platform. I did not want to take that risk. But Benazee will bring more quality. I think expected goals, they were only at about 1, but they dominated possession against Orlando.
But it's like, quick moving. So you possession. Only get credit for expected goals if you actually get a shot off. Yeah. And that was the problem with both Nicholson and Shinashiki, is that they were constantly getting into good spots and the final pass quality. You know, I'm going to say Jonathan Lewis should have been out there for more than a minute and a half, but maybe they figured with Lewis going off to Olympic qualifying, let's run with the guys who are starters, because that's who we're going to have to win with for the next month anyway.
Quick shout out to Shelby Moore, wife of Drew Moore, who put out a text conversation between them after this game in which Drew Moore goes, I have to stay late because I got to do this man of the match thing. And she says, okay, cool. Congrats. I'm so proud of you. And then the next message is a few hours later when he says, I'm locked out of the house. Yeah. I can't get in.
Uh-huh. And of course,
shout out to Drew Moore.
I know how these things work. The spouse has to shame the other person. It's like very typical.
Bring your key, Drew Moore, get that new where you get the code. Those things
are epic.
Or
your garage has the code. Like, that's normal.
I want a code on my house.
Good. There's our winners for week 2, and Loons fans who have been feeling extremely spicy on Twitter all weekend, and more specifically after they dropped a 5-2 win on San Jose's head on the road. Their second road win in the Western Conference so far this year, are probably thinking, you guys never get us any credit. Unless Adrian Heath blows you up, you don't want to talk about us. MLS.com, this is all a sham. Mm-hmm. And that's where you're wrong. Because we invented the Adrian Heath Gaffer of the Week for this exact reason. Congratulations, Adrian Heath.
We didn't have a gnome on the table.
That's the first time in a long time. Yeah. Adrian Heath, you are our Gaffer of the Week. Congratulations. 5-2. Somebody should probably mark Eichel Parra in the 18-yard box, San Jose. Somebody.
Like, Boxall had a wide-open opportunity as well off a corner that he didn't finish, and then they gave up a penalty.
Yeah.
Hello?
Cashier's first half was... and this is kind of self-inflicted, but like, full credit to Minnesota United for taking advantage of everything the Quakes were doing wrong, but Cashier's first half, like, he didn't mark Ike on the first goal. He gave up the penalty
by grabbing Ike.
By grabbing
two-handed.
Ike.
I mean, dude, Andy Rios did it last week to Josie.
Yeah. And then he stood and watched. He stood and watched as the penalty got saved and Robin Lud got, like, this I do not, like, Florin Youngworth should be back in that line.
We are going to have a conversation, perhaps quickly, about San Jose later in for teams that alarm bells should be ringing.
So let's blow up Minnesota a little bit more.
Let's go.
Jan Gragus just serving. He's a baller. Luis Amarillo, the Steph Curry of Major League.
Amarillo. He throws everybody off. It's an A, but by the way,
Steph Curry of Major League.
The countdown is on. He's got two in two games.
For me, if he doesn't hit 40, it's a failure, but he's going to do it, so I don't even care. I'm a Rio for 40. Shoot it from midcourt. I don't even care.
Oh, man.
The guy's out here balling. Should have had the PK. That actually hurt.
It did.
Ended up hurting.
Yeah, I was like, well, but it kind of didn't hurt, because then Robin Lud got in there, and he's been getting a lot of shtick for not scoring or assisting on literally... Well, he just hasn't done either of those things at all.
I'm Amaria or
so bus. It's kind of like, you know, when the striker sees his teammate that needs a pickup, and he's like, you can have this PK.
Yeah, he could have let him take it.
Luis Amaria was like, I know you need this, so I'm going to set this up for the rebound, and then you're going to get the rebound, and we're going to be all good.
But
so
they
2-25.
They blitzed them in the first half. They saw out the second half fairly simply for Minnesota. The perfect road trip to start the year. Now can they, with expectations coming home, with teams now seeing what they've done, can they continue it?
If you had to choose between the three teams at the top of the Western Conference that are currently perfect, Sporting Kansas City, Colorado Rapids, Minnesota United, who has...
Minnesota, because they have the best defense.
You didn't even wait for the question. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Because Michael Boxall struggled when he first came into this league, but he has improved markedly over the past year and a half. Part of that is playing... You know, behind Ozzy Alonso and Jan Gragus, part of it is playing next to Ike Parra. But, like, that's fine. Being playing better soccer when you're surrounded by better players is a skill and a valuable one. So there are no weak links in that spine. They have depth because of Hassani Dotson there. You know, their center back depth isn't nearly as proven, but I think Brent Coleman's given them good minutes. I do think they upgraded at goalkeeper this offseason. Their fullbacks are arguably two of the best in the league at their respective spots.
Shout out Super Draft.
And yeah, shout out Super Draft. Again, they don't have a ton of depth at the fullback spots, so you know maybe they need to address that. But like, if that's what you're looking at, and clearly they're more difficult to break down year over year, and then they're going on the road, and any team that comes up field against them, they are annihilating on the counterattack and on set. Like, that's an identity. Give me that team.
All right. Takes Minnesota there.
I will say there was a moment when Kevin Molino sat down on the field where everyone held their breath in Minnesota.
Mm.
They still have the
Chacon. Chaconistas.
Like, they spent $4 million on him. He's not even making the game day roster. So yeah. At some point, we're going to see that kid play.
Next five games for Minnesota. I'm just looking at them right now and kind of trying to extrapolate here. Home against the Red Bulls next Sunday. Then they're home against Montreal. Then they're home against San Jose. Then they're home against the Galaxy. And then they're at Houston. It is not inconceivable. I'm not going to say they're going to win all those games.
Do it.
Come on, that'd be insane. But it's not inconceivable that they're going to be at the week seven mark, sitting atop the Western Conference and thinking, we got a decent lead at the top. That is well within reason for Minnesota United. So congratulations to Adrian Heath, our Adrian Heath gaffer of the week. You know we had to do it. Hey, Producer Anders, how many minutes did we wait to talk about Atlanta United? Can you give...
While you're doing that, can I shout out happy birthday to Eric Durkee? Also apologize for trashing him for not sending me a jersey, which he sent me, and I just couldn't find it.
What about shoes? Promise me.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Durkee, if you're listening, Doyle still wants those shoes. Those
loose. So happy birthday, Doyle
size
expects
tens,
a present.
Okay, it's been 36 minutes, and we've managed to not talk about Atlanta United, so I got the itch. We got to do it. Their first game without Joseph Martinez, a 2-1 win
at home. They were fine. They beat Cincinnati at home. They got Kendall Waston defending in space against PT Martinez. There was only one way that was going to end. Barco made a nice run. PT had two assists. Barco had a goal and assist. Emerson Hyman, second nice game in a row. Had a nice performance from their academy center back, George Campbell. The end. Good.
The end?
Good work.
We don't talk about Adam John at all?
No, they didn't change. They didn't change their formation, which is right.
I agree.
They like PT and
don't run
Barco,
away just yet. Let's see how it goes.
PT and Barco are clearly more comfortable playing underneath a true center forward. Now, Adam John is not going to be Joseph Martinez.
He didn't have a shot.
He was fine.
No shots.
He made the right runs.
Yeah, he did.
You know,
that's really all
the right layouts. Yeah. They signed J.J. Williams. Maybe J.J. Williams competes and wins that job. He's got a lot of talent. They were, I think, pretty willing to get out in transition. Brooks Lennon had a couple of nice passes initiating that. They were fine. You beat Cincinnati at home. That's what you're supposed to do.
Rosetto made his debut as well, which is big for them.
Wearing the number 9, which is weird.
It was weird.
Yeah.
Ezequiel Barco, I still have so much hope for because there are like 6-7 times a game where he is sort of on the precipice. You're like, he's ripping this game apart right now.
It was awesome.
Yeah, that was awesome. But then there were like the moments where it's a 3v1 and you can just see his brain like melt down in real time.
Like, dude, just play the ball into space.
Yeah. Just
kick the ball forwards.
Yeah. So I'm hoping for it, man. I still think that 20 goal and assist combined guarantee.
But everything we've seen so far this year from Emerson Hyman is better than what we saw last year. Just in combination play, confidence to be an option all the time, play the ball into tight spaces.
It surprised me how good he's been.
Yeah. And that's what they need because they need an upgrade somewhere else from what they were last year.
Expansion team.
Yeah.
And Cincinnati at home. So take it with a grain of salt, but like, let's not overblow it.
We're going to learn some more this next week because you've got Club America.
Wyke is hurt.
Yeah.
So you're thin on the back line from a forward from USL getting injured. This could get ugly.
Yeah, Club America.
It might not.
I mean, Club America had
Miles Robinson probably not going to play.
Yeah, and then you have Sporting
KC. Doesn't sound like Escobar.
We're going to talk about CCL. Jose Martinez was there in sunglasses with crutches. Looking awfully cool, but that's all we're going to see from Joseph this year. Let's hit our expansion club updates. We kind of shouted out Robbie Robinson, but I'm curious your take on Inter Miami in week 2, Doyle.
they looked a lot better than in week one. And granted, week one was a really tough ask going to LAFC, but they switched their formation up. It was kind of a 3-4-2-1 that was maybe a 3-4-1-2 at times. It was Robinson and then either Morgan or Pizarro up top and one of them dropping underneath. It made a lot of sense because the whole point of playing three at the back and then with Will Trapp and Victor Ulloa in front of that back line and neither of those guys really pushes forward is like, okay, you're going to defend statically. And that's what they tried to do at LAFC, except with the 4-3-3, which is honestly supposed to be a much more flowing and malleable formation. So in this instance, having more structure actually gave them more creativity because Neal is getting forward on one side and Sweat getting forward on the other side stretched DC out and allowed Pizarro, Morgan, and Robinson the room they needed to go to work underneath. And every time DC got stretched out, those three guys were creating something really dangerous. It was really, really promising. It got less promising once Robinson got hurt. Because he was great. Like, he was great in that first half. And then 10 minutes in the second half,
yeah.
Roman Torres
got a lot less promising when Roman Torres basically took a goal off the board that would have made 2-0. Luis Morgan had the goal. He was fist pumping. They were group hugging. But on the other end, Roman Torres reached his big paw out and knocked the ball away from Julian Gressel, which was completely
unnecessary.
The whole thing was unnecessary because it all comes back to, like, Roman Torres getting that ball and just, like, closing his eyes and just swinging his foot at it right into Gressel. Like, literally, just put your foot on it, turn around, and kick it to the goalkeeper, and at least Robles put it 4,500 miles up the field. Whatever. 2-1 loss. DC will take it. Inter Miami have some building block moments, but still not quite there. But congratulations to Rodolfo Pizarro for scoring the first goal in club history.
Huge moment early on, but it's a big moment to see Diego Alonso say, we're going to compete.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not going to be LAFC two games in, but I'm going to try and get results, which I think is necessary. And everyone's talked about what does Inter Miami have to do, how flashy does it have to be, blah, blah, blah. You've got to be in games. You've got to win games. Nashville played home to Atlanta. 60,000 people came out, and they saw a competitive game for 90 minutes.
Yeah.
That team was in it the whole game, and that creates tension in the stands, and that is fun to be a part of. So I think going into that week one at home, it was good to see Diego Alonso look at his team and say, I can make this a little easier for some of these guys. And I do have a match winner in MLS in Pizarro. And we do have some talent around that. It's not ideal that you've got so many injuries that you're still waiting on potentially two designated players, whatever it is. You're missing Carranza. You're probably missing Robbie Robinson going home. Juan Agudelo is not fit yet, or he's your starting center forward. Either way, it's a bad thing. So it's none of that's ideal, but to see Diego Alonso recognize what he had to do, I think is positive for the team in terms of being competitive year one.
This setup, I feel, is probably a decent one for the Galaxy. Home opener for Inter Miami coming up this next weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Just pack that box, baby. Don't let any easy crosses in. Chicharito, 1v5. We'll see how that works out for you. Speaking of Nashville, they went to Portland. Portland did a huge solid for the city of Nashville and everybody affected by the tornadoes there. So congratulations on that one. And then Portland got a 1-0 win. We'll talk about the Timbers here in a second, but I just want to throw this out there because we both had like dueling Twitter takes within 4 minutes at the end of this game, which was, should Walker Zimmerman just play center forward for Nashville? Because they're not getting much out of that position.
No.
And every time they push him forward, all of a sudden, I know it's the end of games and it's kind of an outlier and maybe it means nothing. But
no,
he's
no,
better
it,
in the air.
It does mean nothing. Let's just make sure we're not maybe.
Okay, maybe it means something in the sense they got to find somebody who can do an approximation, something up top.
Yeah,
because the rest of it looks pretty good. The rest of it looks more than respectable.
So this is my, I agree with you, right? And it does come down to that engine room, which I think we all suspected was going to be very good, of Dax McCarty and Anibal Godoy, who I thought outplayed their counterparts on the Timbers bite. A mile in this game last.
Every time he does that, Mike Jacobs is probably just like going back in the archives and being like, overpaid for him, you say?
I mean, I still think they paid a lot for Godoy, but he was excellent.
Yeah,
he really, really was. Like you said, it all looked super promising, except there were three positions that we all identified as problematic for Nashville SC going into this season. Right back, Eric Miller cost them another goal in this one. Right wing, David Akam is probably not going to win the MVP this year. And Dom Baji at center forward, and I've finally divested of all Dombaji stock. The yield curve inverted on Dombaji stock years ago.
Always sell at the low point.
Yeah.
I would love to see the Doyle MLS market. Yeah, like, right. Like the peaks and valleys.
I mean, still have Derek Jones stock. He's
it's just a 401k of Jack McInerney in the stock. That's waiting.
Exactly. I never had Jack Mac stock. That was Lawless. Greg Lawless had all of the Jack McInerney stock. But like this, you know, they looked better when Rios came on. I thought he got into dangerous spots and was actually able to get shots off. They're, you know, they had two tough games to start the year. They outplayed Atlanta, I thought. They outplayed Portland. They just didn't have the final third quality. And if we had sat here a month ago and said, I bet Nashville's going to play pretty well, but lack final third quality, everybody would have said, yep.
Yep.
But you take that, right?
I think so.
At that point, you would have said, they haven't spent on center forward. You don't expect it to be
well,
there.
Well, I mean, maybe Mike Jacobs can take this to ownership and be like, see, we're good.
Did you watch Alan Pulido last week and all these other guys?
Publicly,
this is what
they've been he's been saying that for like two months. Like, we want a number nine.
Can I just throw out there that Adam John started for Atlanta United, had 17 goals in USL last year. Daniel Rios had 21 the last 2 years. Can't start over Dombaji.
Yeah. Well, yet. I think after this past week, you have to rethink that if you're Gary Smith and Rios has looked better and the team has looked better when he has been out there. And I'm not sure I would go for a number nine, by the way, if I was Nashville.
I think right wing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just get someone who can open up the game a little.
Control the game away in a way that few number nines are able to control the game. Because the chances are there. It's not like I'm crushing poor Dombaji here, but it really wasn't his fault. It was like there was nobody with that ability to hit the last pass and turn a decent chance into like, oh, he's got to tap it.
There's still something awkward about the things Mukhtar wants to do on the field and the space Randall Leal wants to play in. And I can't get over the fact that I want to swap them. I know they tried it in preseason and felt like it didn't work. Mukhtar wants space to run.
You want Leal.
And Leal wants pieces around him.
Yeah.
Now, it's harder to start at central midfield, hence why every player starts wide, because consistently guys are around you. Mentally, you have to be turned on more. You have to be an option. It's not like you can be an option or not. It's required to help your team build out, and maybe he's not capable of doing that, but he wants to come in field.
Yeah, we all do.
And Mukhtar wants space to run, and it seems like
you think maybe a 3-4-2-1? Or, a 4-3-2-1, where you get Leal and Mukhtar underneath the true center forward.
And then you have Jones. And start Derek Jones.
And Dax and Godoy.
Yeah. The problem with that is that Lovitz on the left and Eric Miller on the right, neither of them is really much of a threat or
Lovitz
pass connector.
Lovitz will get up the field at least. Miller physically
won't. Yeah, but you have to hit the right pass.
Well, getting there is half the battle.
Yeah, some stuff to figure out there. Let's talk Portland, though. I mean, they'll take it. That'll do. 1-0 at home. They need to win at home. Two losses
first,
to start the season would have been awful.
First March win since 2017.
Wow. Win. Not just home win. Just win.
I believe they said win. I didn't double check that, but they were talking about that on
They were outshot. They were outshot at home by an expansion team, 14-3. They have two goals in 180 minutes. Jimmy Chara has one shot in two games. Is there reason to be concerned here, or is it really just Gio Savarese saying, this is actually what I want us to be?
I think it's that. If you look at the way this team has played under Savarese, anytime they have tried to go out there and play like expansive, attacking, possession-based, attractive soccer, they've gotten smoked. When they got to MLS, you know, got through the playoffs in 2018, they did it by sitting back. And by being a team that just puts, you guys are both touching your faces. Don't you read the news? Sticking your fingers in your eyes. Come on, guys. Discipline.
25 seconds here. Yeah. Hot water. That's my life.
Like, this is a team that has always, under Gio Savarese, and I would argue in the last few years under Caleb Porter as well, been much more comfortable being a team that is not the protagonist, that sits back and absorbs. And last year it took Savarese months and months to admit that. This year took him a game. So I would have been more concerned if I was a Timbers fan if they had gone out there and tried to play attacking soccer. I think this is who they are, and I think that coming you know, one this switch coming one game into the season is probably good for Portland in the long run because they're just better when they play.
You're like thinking this. In terms of when they did figure this out 2 years ago, they go to MLS Cup sort yep. of logic, like
yeah.
Why try to be something that we're not? But then that's confusing too because they went out and spent so much money in the attack.
Well, that's why they have to try and be something that they're not because they've spent that money.
Because like they don't have the quality.
Every time, because the other thing Gio Savarese has done since he's gotten there is tried to play in segments of the season, failed to, and then reverted back to sitting deep defensively and hitting on the counter. And then in the off seasons, they go and spend money on attacking players. It was Brian Fernandez last year. It was Jimmy Chara this year. It was Niskota this year. And we haven't seen Niskota yet. Maybe whatever he brings to this team, it's a little more expansive than what Mora does. And it allows someone for them to play through. It makes it easier for them to create.
Do you think it's play through or is it play off of?
Well, it was the difference. What's the difference?
I don't know. When I think play through, I think of like, you're getting that's a creative sort of fulcrum, kind of like what you were talking about with Nashville on the right wing, yeah. where they're the ones chance creating. Whereas I think Niskota ideally is just like letting them advance up the field and then finding the feet of Valeri or Blanco and letting them be the creator.
Ah, got it. Either way, those are players who want options close to them to play off of to break teams down.
Or do you mean play through?
At this point, I have no idea. And I'm ready to leave.
On first.
Yeah, exactly. And they didn't really get that. Last year, Fernandez kind of floated wide, and it made it a little awkward in spacing. Obobese was better at being a hold-up player.
I thought they were better going forward on Sunday night in the last 20 minutes when Obobese came in.
But ding, 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 ding.
You're contractually required to think
say that.
But they spent a lot of money for Mora and Niskota.
Sorry for analyzing the game.
How much did he cost, the stock, the Obobese stock you have? Where is it at right now?
It's not tanking.
Okay. All right.
He's going to the Olympics.
There's been an influx of investment.
And he just got a contract extension.
Yeah.
Diego Valeri, 2 goals away from 80 goals, 80 assists in his career.
Legend.
Regular season career. He's
what do you think about? What
well
do you think about the
80?
Yeah, well, what do you think about Brian the top knot?
Wait. I got only 2 men in MLS history have 100 goals, 100 assists. Landon Donovan, Jaime Moreno. Will Diego Valeri join them?
Mm.
Tough one, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to bet against Diego. He just got the new contract.
So
seems like they still.
If he has 2 good years, right? For Diego,
he has
going
2 good years,
10
he's really
10.
Close.
Yeah.
Which is more problematic for him, the goals or the assists?
Probably the assists.
I would say
because they can't score. Right now,
but they just spent $5 million.
I was going to say the goals because I think the opportunities in transition for him to be the goal scorer will be less and less for him, especially if they're going to play like this. I think the assists, set pieces alone, he'll find a way to get there. Mm. That was last year's story for him. We'll see with the Portland Timbers. Let's talk early alarm bells. And we waited 36 minutes to do Atlanta United. You're welcome. We waited until now to do Chicharito. Still scoreless.
Who?
Who? What? Yeah, no kidding. LA Galaxy still winless.
How happy is Guillermo Barros Schelotto that everybody has Chicharito to blame this on when it's actually him sitting there on the sidelines going, cross more. I want more crosses. But no, continue.
Yeah, he was
continue
like,
flaming
oh, good. Javier
kid.
Hernandez did not go to the press conference. Guess what's going to dominate the news cycle instead of our loss at home to the Vancouver Whitecaps, who I still have picked at the
also,
bottom of the Western Conference.
Not on the stat sheet. But Carlos Vela gets an assist for helping out by also not going to the press conference.
But,
so taking the pressure off Chicharito.
But he did
you
the pregame.
You notice he did the pregame.
He did the pregame.
Fox Sports one, not with Taylor.
And he did score.
He did score.
And his,
that's a good thing. Yeah,
scored.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah,
important.
Yeah, scoring's good.
What can change? Can't, like, it, you would.
The simplest way to put this is that the Galaxy are settling for bad crosses. They get, when they get upfield, and it's always Felcher on the right side, and it's Insua on the left. They're just firing away. And like I thought Twellman's breakdown that he did at halftime of the Timbers game, focusing on this, was very good because it just showed they settled time and time again. Even when Chicharito was going 1v3 in the box. Now, there is some sense that maybe this is leftover PTSD about playing with Zlatan, because when Zlatan was in there, he wanted you to get him the ball any way you could as quickly as possible, and scored 30 goals just lofting in 1,000 crosses to Zlatan. You can't do that with Chicharito. As great as he is in the air, and he is fantastic in the air in the same way that Joseph Martinez is, he is not going to win those same kinds of crosses. So the Galaxy need to have some patience, need to have those fullbacks combined with their wingers and their central midfielders. And by the way, they have guys like Sasha Kljestan, Sebastian Lletget, Jonathan Dos Santos. Like, slow down. Figure out how to get the ball to the side of the box. Pullbacks. Pullbacks either for Chicharito busted into the, you know, into the six, or pullbacks to the top of the box for a late arriving run. This, you have the personnel to play that way. But the problem is, honestly, Guillermo Barrascalotto is going into press conferences, and I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt here in that I believe what he's saying in, his, in the press conference is what he's saying to his team. He's saying, yeah, we got to do what we did last year. We just got to get it into the box more. And, like, that's not going to work. That is absolutely not going to work. If you, and last year they crossed the ball 16 times a game from open play, the most of any team in the TAM era. This year they're crossing the ball 22 and a half times a game from open play, which is the most that we have in our data set, which goes back to the 2010 season. Like, the 10 years ago, most, like, think about that Sporting Kansas City team. Anytime they won the ball high, they're just ripping it to the back post for Kai or CJ. This team, with one guy in the box going 1v4, is crossing the ball 20% more often than that team did.
Ben Kavanaugh, hit us up. After this weekend's performance and his performance since he left Manchester United, is it fair to assume Javier Hernandez is a busted flush and is riding the LA Galaxy for a final career paycheck? Feelings are he is well past his prime. Whose feelings? Clearly Ben's. He has never been a prolific goal scorer. Completely false, Ben. Highest he has ever scored is 13 in his first season at Man United. Again, false. Had more with Bayer Leverkusen, Ben. Since then, it's been a downward trend. Okay, after Leverkusen, I'll
wow,
give you that.
Wow, what did Ben do to you? Just he sent email, so you're
are we blinded by
guy?
His status from Europe, or will he explode once he's settled in? We're not blinded by his status from Europe. He was a goal scorer for some of the biggest clubs in the world. He wasn't like a Zlatan-esque, just change everything starter, but he was that for Mexico in large part, not because he dominated games, but because he dominated the one place that matters, which is the score sheet.
Yeah.
He can do this.
All this
he's
stuff
only
that
31.
Joseph Martinez has done
do
for the last 3 years. Yeah.
He can do it. Come on. We need more.
It's Galotto, by the way. Like, let's make this clear at this point. It is not Chicharito. It's not Alexander Kataya, who has been disappointing. It's not the midfield, which is missing Jonathan Dos Santos for the most part. When a team plays like this, Zlatan's gone. This is on the coach. Guillermo Barrascalotto has to fix this.
We were going to talk about San Jose here too, but I kind of feel like we already dragged them a little bit.
Yeah.
Daniel Vega had a tough one.
Mm-hmm.
He had a tough one. Some shots and headers going in. Gotcha
had a tough one.
Yeah, a lot of tough ones.
Who else?
Seems like a theme. I don't think we got to go that
Lima
way.
Nick Lima had a tough one.
How about this? The Play Your Kids, hashtag Play Your Kids, Young Player of the Week, and it's got to be Ricardo Pepi. Let's go. 17. First MLS
overlooking
goal.
Overlooking Gil Fuentes, like? Or no, it was Cade Cowell. Anyway.
Yeah, good try. One goal every 86 minutes in MLS for Ricardo Pepi. You cannot argue with
that's
that
a better
rate
than Joseph Martinez.
That is, Robbie Keane would be proud
it's
of
just
that.
Stats.
Yeah, that's pure math.
Numbers.
CCL Fever is back as well. Of course, we'll be watching this week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Tuesday, Montreal host Olympia. You can watch on FS1, RDS in Canada, and Today Any if you want to do that in Spanish. NYCFC is going to host Tigres at Red Bull Arena.
Which apparently is
on Wednesday.
Out.
Oh, really?
Apparently.
8 p.m. Eastern. I was going to go to that.
I know,
like,
so was
forgot
I.
About it.
Neither of us got tickets because we assumed it wouldn't be.
Dang. And then America is going to host Atlanta also on Wednesday. And then Thursday, LAFC, Cruz Azul. Cruz Azul at the top of Liga MX standings
like six
right now.
In a row. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're on a good run.
The last couple.
They're on a good run.
Rolling.
But did you? We did the AT&T weekend pre. I should know the name of the show that I was on with Susanna last week. We had Herc on.
Yeah.
Herc was trashing Cruz Azul.
Yeah.
Trashing.
Interesting.
That's what you call culture.
Yes.
Mm.
Yep.
Here are Herc's most likely to advance. He says Atlanta are fourth. He's not giving them much of a chance against America, who drew 3-3 this weekend against Pumas. NYCFC is third. Tigres, I guess that makes sense, but Tigres still just kind of languishing down outside the Liga spots. And
what did they do?
Wait, wait. Alarm bells we just talked about. NYCFC has never scored an MLS goal in 2020. Hence the fear they can't get through against Tigres. Two games, zero goals.
Yeah. Well, they had more.
Only team in MLS to not score a goal.
Yeah.
That's your
fault. Ever hasn't even taken a shot.
Boom. Stats.
Yeah. Two tough games.
Yeah, but
though.
In CCL, he's taken more than a shot. He's got a couple goals.
Montreal
second, according to Herc, and then LAFC are top, which is interesting that he's putting them at the top to beat Cruz Azul. But if he was smoking them, then that makes a lot of sense as well. How would you rank this, and which game is the most interesting to you, Dave?
I would rank this exactly how he did.
Hmm.
And the game that is most interesting is probably Tigres NYCFC, because I think those are the two just pure talent that will be intriguing to see. But if LAFC can do to Cruz Azul what they did to León and what they've done in Major League Soccer, I will be jumping out of my window excited to watch that happen. Yeah. I watching this week, doing it to Philly, you were like, do this to a Liga MX team, please. So that's where it is.
MLS Weekend Preview presented by AT&T.
Well done, producer Chris. Well done. Tells I me. Was being told as
On
well,
brand,
and
yeah.
I was ignoring it. So the good thing they went to you for that one.
I think you're right. LAFC have the best shot because they're the best team. They might actually be the best team in North America. Nobody's done what they did to León. Nobody's done that to them in like 18 months. They just smoked them. If you play like that against Cruz Azul, you have a shot. But I think they kind of have to figure out how to be a little bit pragmatic when they're playing at 7,500 feet.
The troublesome thing here, in, you know, as someone who's watched this tournament many years now, and it's constantly ready for the gut punch, is that you really do sort of need the second leg to be at home if you're an MLS team.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of need that. And the only team that's going to get that is Atlanta United. So these first legs, so huge. And it's not just about winning or scoring goals and aggregate. It's mostly about away goals. Because you know that once you go to Mexico or go to Honduras in Montreal's case, that it can blow up in your face really, really quickly, that it can get weird. So how do you sort of ride that wave at home? Can you be the one that gets the breaks? Can you be the one that gets the sketchy call? Can you be the one that, like, sees the other team brick a sitter in the 89th minute, which is inevitably how you get through these games, these series? It's going to take luck. Will we have luck? You don't think it takes luck?
No, it always takes luck, but I would say that I think LAFC is capable of things for an MLS team that we've never seen before.
But aren't they also capable of moments that you can't see in CCL?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
But I still think that if they win and give up goals, they have the chance to score on
that
the road.
That's fair.
And they should have scored at León if they had any quality in the final third, but they created the opportunities, and that was without Atuesta. And that was without playing four more games to warm up and tune up. So I agree with you, but I think LAFC is the one where if they win, whatever the scoreline is, they'll be in an okay spot. NYCFC can't afford to give up a goal. Montreal cannot afford to give up a goal.
You think so? So what shot do you give NYCFC? This team's good. Like, this is a 65-point team last year.
But it's also a team that got punched in the mouth in the playoffs from a team in Toronto that is, like, the closest we have to Tigres of, like, we just turn it on when we need to, and we have superior talent.
Yeah.
And that's what Tigres is, and I know they've struggled.
Still have superior talent?
Well, they have Gignac. He's the best player in the region.
Not anymore.
Yeah, he is.
Vela is the best player in the region.
Prove it. Prove it on the field,
okay,
baby.
That's fair. No, that's fair. I mean, how often does Gignac prove it in CCL play?
Okay, so that's not fair, but those are in the finals.
Okay.
They do still make it to the final of this competition every time.
I feel like I just triggered. Are you a Buffalo Bills fan or something? Like, what just happened?
No, no team I root for makes championships, so don't even go there. Yeah, don't even get there.
All right, we will watch this week, and we will report back on Thursday. Unfortunately, we'll have to wait till Monday on that LAFC Cruz Azul
MLS
game.
Weekend Preview presented by AT&T.
Oh, yeah, just keep repeating.
Noon on Fridays.
Whoa. You're like a puppet.
Right.
You're like a marionette. Somebody's just
Keep
got
the
their
producer's
hand
hat.
Up the, yeah. Do we talk Olympic qualifying roster here? What do you guys think?
Yeah.
What do you want to talk? No
I
Mason.
Want, I want David. I want David to start.
Yeah, he wants. Well, you want me to start? I thought you wanted
I'm
me
looking
to,
up the actual roster.
I thought you wanted me to start in Olympic qualifying.
You realize that I make a rundown, and in the rundown,
I've got it.
It's
fine.
Right in front of you.
I would say for
producer Anders helps not at all in this rundown process.
So we had 50. Yeah, we had 50 producent. We had 50 players on the preliminary roster from that group. This roster makes sense. You've got versatility along the back line. You've got a starter at every spot.
Christian Pulisic, Tyler Adams, Weston McKennie,
yes,
Serginho Dest,
Gio Reyna,
Josh Sargent,
Chris Richards. None of them were coming. They didn't get released.
Oh.
So they weren't coming. Of the players that you had the opportunity to get, I think this is a group that can play players in a few different ways up and down the field. You've got depth in central midfield. You've got options of different styles of center forwards. You've got some good attacking options off the wings, and you've got a pretty versatile back line. You only get 20 players, so this group just makes sense. There's a few MLS starters you'd love to have seen here if qualifying for the Olympics is your number
Sam
one
Vines,
goal.
Right? Yeah.
But I think playing MLS minutes for a 20-year-old is more important than our national team qualifying
for the
Olympics.
And it does seem like at this point like there are multiple MLS teams who are like, you can't have this guy.
See, I don't know that Colorado would be one.
I don't know either.
Because they want his market value to go up.
But Sam Vines is a full national team. Yeah. He played well against Costa Rica, I thought, and he's like good defensively, mm-hmm. which is not something you can say for Chris Gloucester. From, you know, I've watched probably a half dozen of his games in the Dutch second tier, which is basically USL level. Like, this is so, like, there are a lot of players missing from this roster, but there's still more than enough roster or more than enough talent on this roster to get it done.
Yeah.
Jackson Ewell, Reggie Cannon are the full-time U.S. national team guys. A bunch of guys like Mark McKenzie, Jesus Ferreira,
Pamacall,
Ebobasi, Jonathan Lewis, Ulianez, who have gotten plenty of, you know, I don't want to say plenty, but who have gotten full national team looks, who are doing it for their clubs. The surprise to me in terms of who's here is Bofo Saucedo. Not because he's not good enough, because I'm surprised that Pumas released him. He's starting for one of the traditional giants in Liga MX, and like, why are you letting him? You're not required to let him go for this. So that was a pleasant surprise. As you mentioned at the top, Mason Toy not being there was a bit of a shock.
Yeah, I wanted to have a longer conversation about what's up with him in Minnesota and what his kind of developmental prognosis is, but I'm not sure that we have time in this show. So if you have thoughts, Loons fans or otherwise, let us know, 401-206-0MLS. Let's get to the mailbag, and we'll start with Sims City 2020, clearly a Red Bulls fan with the Sims there. He had the highest score in our extra time fantasy league. He had 106 points, and he's a legend because he started Rod Fanny. He knows what's up. Huh. Also, he had Ike, Gregus, and Briant, so that helped him out in this week. And he captained Carlos Vela, as I did, but I didn't do as well as he did. Take us through it. What do we got, Dave?
Well, we've got Matthew Brookins, who wants the rip on Guillermo Barros-Skelotto, which Doyle has taken a lot of the play on. But basically, he's saying, how does Legette not start in this midfield, in this game with Corona and Jonah Dos Santos? Now, Legette started week one when Jonah Dos Santos was injured and Corona came off the bench. Now you get those two back and you don't start Legette. It seems to make no sense to him. And he's, I think, going in the Doyle direction of don't blame Zlatan or Chicharito. You've got to blame GBS.
Nobody can blame Zlatan. Zlatan is peerless. He's never done anything wrong. Chicharito still got some work to do to measure up. But I told you, he wasn't going to be dominant. So this was the shift. They were going to have to go from a guy who just would make magic with like peanuts to somebody who needs something a little better.
Let me ask you this. Do you guys feel like Galaxy fans are getting to this point, and I guess me as well, getting to this point on Scalotto too soon?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I think one of the keys to bringing Chicharito in and what you want to do is a lot of it's going to be on timing. That's who he is as a player, and that's who I think the unit now is. It's not, outside of Pavone, it's not a ton of guys who are going to take someone 1v1 out of nowhere and create. It's going to be about combination play, and I think a lot of that comes with familiarity and time. And I think it's going to take
but
a lot of time.
That was
also
literally the criticism of Scalotto's Boca Juniors teams, was that too often they devolved into just 1v1, we have superior talent, we're trusting these guys to win.
But they did have superior talent.
The Galaxy don't.
Yeah, but I don't know that if he was winning with Boca, why change it? The other thing for Galaxy
is...
not
Boca anymore.
What?
Because he's not with Boca.
Understood. The other, but I'm saying that's not an example
he's
that
saying
he's
that what
refusing
he was at
to
Boca
do that.
Okay.
Doesn't necessarily have to apply to who he is now, because when he was at Boca, he had tools that were just going to guide you in a certain direction.
So your theory,
because I'm interrupting you now. Okay. Your theory then is that he did that at Boca because that was the easiest way to win in Boca. He crossed a million times to the back post last year with the Galaxy because that was the easiest way to get Zlatan his 30 goals, which we know Zlatan really, really wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And that, given that, you feel like he's going to figure out the right way.
I think that I need to give him at least 6 weeks. I'm not jumping on him 2 weeks in. Also, they started Nick Depew and Giancarlo Gonzalez at
center
back.
Nick Depew's been good.
Understood, but it changes the way your midfield can play with the belief they have of what's going on behind them.
And I think Jonah Dos Santos staying high in the attack and being a part of it consistently is a part of this team being great. And I don't know that he's comfortable doing that right now with the pieces.
Also, their best player is Jonathan Dos Santos.
And he's played 45 minutes.
Correct. So that's an issue as well. I also think if we're just going to real quick put a bow on this one, it is much more difficult to do what now he's being asked to do, which is get the best out of Chicharito with this roster that he has, than it is to win at Boca Juniors with their level of talent.
How? No.
And
how
cross the ball to the back post to Zlatan.
How hard is it to tell your fullbacks to not hit a cross every time you touch the ball in the final third? That's not hard.
I would agree with that.
Watch. You want to fix
okay,
the Galaxy?
Okay, that's not the hard part.
Just watch tape of LAFC. And if you're like, oh, LAFC have Velasco. Watch tape of FC Dallas. Watch tape of Colorado. These guys, they're constantly getting upfield into good positions and combining a little bit and at least not settling.
Also, Colorado had like 0.8 expected goals.
Like I said, yeah. Colorado lacked the final pass quality from their wingers in this game. And honestly, from Nomli, who had that wonderful goal but didn't do much else. Do you really think the Galaxy are going to lack that if it's Pavone and Katai and Kleshtin and Leggett and Dos Santos?
I was interested that Pavone swapped wings for most of the second half as if in a way to say Felter, just give him the ball. But it didn't work, and Felcher's hitting crosses
hey man,
from
anytime,
midfield.
Anytime you could run your entire attack through Rolf Felcher, yeah. You got to do it.
This is interesting because we literally ignored this game up until this point. Ben Prattley says, Baron T, this weekend was an MLS Cup preview between the Seattle Sounders and Crew SC, and we have not mentioned this game. We have an entire wall of Seattle Sounders behind Doyle.
I blame producer Anders.
But we have not mentioned this game. 1-1 in the end. Columbus goes on the road, takes an early lead. Seattle gets back into it. Thoughts on this?
Can I just, because I do instant replay and my mind revolves around refereeing all the time on the weekends, can I ask you what you guys thought of the penalty on Harrison Offal that got the Sounders the draw here? Because IFAB rule changes that came into effect this year for MLS, they were in effect to being in the Premier League season, yada, yada, yada. One of them is that if it hits the body part of a defender and then hits an arm, that's not a foul. And it hits Harrison Offal directly in his knee, his arm's at his side, it hits his arm.
His arm was out.
Yeah, his
not,
arm,
his
was
arm
out.
Is not out like that.
It absolutely.
No,
is.
No. But
his had, right arm is.
No, he had to. He moves his knee up. Like, where's your arm supposed to go? Like, his arm barely moved up. It's right next to his leg.
But it blocked across from going in the box.
You're
it didn't
a
go
crew
in the box.
Stan.
I'm more of a Harrison Offal Stan. I will accept
Harrison
that.
Offal is.
I love Harrison
awesome.
Offal. Him and Milton Valenzuela are like guys.
But I feel like our guy Sam should be on the show because Nuhu was awesome.
Yeah.
He changed that game when he came out.
He created that moment, which
yeah.
was him running down a ball that was dead.
Yeah.
And then just trying to get a cross in.
Yep.
And that was a big moment for this team.
All right. There was a mystery mail that I was.
Wait. Did anyone think this is a potential MLS Cup preview?
Yeah. I mean, it didn't play out like it, but.
The or Sounders, maybe it did.
The Sounders have not lost. They've played four games without Nico Ladero, and they have not lost yet. And I thought they were better in this game than they were in their opening game against the Fire. They outshot Columbus something like 18-5. If Rui Diaz had been a little cleaner, which we know he always is in the playoffs, they would have scored two or three goals. As for Columbus, they got a point at Seattle. If you do that, you're probably a pretty solid team. You could definitely see both of these teams getting.
I could see literally anything.
Wow.
Just, you know.
What does Weeby do for the show?
Wow. He's hungover from MLS late exactly. night or whatever it is.
Did we talk about Toronto versus NYCFC?
Yeah, we've talked about nothing.
But it's time to get to our mystery mail and get out of here.
Respondent Bo here. When did Anders become producent instead of, you know, the standard vernacular, producer? Weeby's been saying it for the last few weeks, and it's been driving me crazy.
Is this a multicultural
like
podcast?
Like nails on a chalkboard crazy. But I was mortified when on Monday's episode, or maybe it was last Thursday, I thought I heard Doyle say it. Generally, I can look past Weeby's many verbal tics. Mm. The malpropisms, the mispronunciations.
Malapropisms.
I clearly screwed that up. But Doyle, I thought he was the last bulwark protecting the English language from the continuous onslaught at Extra Time Radio House. In all seriousness, love the show. Well, at least I've entered into an unhealthy codependent relationship with it over the last decade. But is it too much to ask for you to stop saying producing, call him producer Anders, or better yet, just Anders? Huh. Now, keep up the mostly good work.
What do we think about that? Mm-hmm.
So, Anders Aarhus, our producer of
this
show.
Wait. I thought we were told that you have to, in Norwegian, you have to do like the glasness.
Yeah.
Is it not Arhus?
Well, that's Norwegian. Anders is Swedish,
correct.
And we celebrate his Swedish background passion and his Swedish love by using the Swedish term for producer, which is producent. That's all you need to know.
This whole bit made me vaguely uncomfortable, but that's fine.
Okay. Time to get out of here, if that's the case. Thank you for listening.
Doesn't handle Scandinavia well.
Yeah, I know.
Especially the Faroe Islands and Iceland.
Goodbye.